George, na atah at just slag sit, si a at sish, please please abt, o class si, o class kla, Adam. O matzakwitas sish kla o ye, yakwil it in hohtik shih at yakwil witas in takas hohtik shih. Hi everyone, today is July 12th. This is today's lecture. This is the final lecture of our second July weekend. This weekend we've been working on units 10 and 11. My plan for this lecture is first to do a final overview of units 10 and 11. Second, to give you a preview of the next three units. Third, to talk about some pronunciation issues. And fourth, to say some things about what I think good practice looks like and how we can plan and prepare for it. Before I get to all that, I want to give you all a reminder. For you enrolled students, there's eight or nine of you, I need to know at the end of every month, that is at the end of June, July, August, and September, how many hours you've spent both in class and working on this material outside of class. I've provided a form for this purpose on our course webpage. All of you but one have turned that in for June, but the July due date is coming up. And it's very important that you keep track of that information on a daily basis. You do not want to be trying to remember all the time you spent on July 29th. That will be your final reminder for the month of July. Short answer is yes. Yeah, thank you for that question. The question is, some of you do lots of language-related things. So the question is, which outside practice are you allowed to count as practice for this class? And the answer is, I leave that up to you. The question is, does what you're working on support the things we're learning in this course? If the answer is yes, then you can count them. I'm projecting the Ahadas and Uchalad version of Unit 10. I'll be using this to give my final overview of this unit. In Unit 10, we learned some more words for our relatives. We first learned how to talk about our parents in Unit 5. Unit 5 is on self-introductions. Unit 10 introduces the next most important kin, who include grandparents, aunties, uncles, children, grandchildren, and siblings. Oh, we learned how to say, I have one brother, I have three sisters, I have four. We also learned a couple different ways of asking how many questions, which are a little bit complicated, because some dialects prefer to ask how many questions in the indirect way as opposed to the direct way. Also, certain combinations of how many plus possession words are avoided because they are ambiguous. So, for example, it is difficult in some dialects to say, how many pens do you have? Because how many pens do you have sounds too close to do you have pens? And as a result, each dialect has its own solution to how to avoid that ambiguity. We also practiced four kinds of relationship that we can have to other people. One of those is relationship by blood or marriage, which is expressed with the word okayu. Then there's having a friend, which is expressed with ukschain or upath. Then there's living with or being in a romantic relationship, which is expressed with okwink. And last, being officially married to someone, which is expressed by otshe. That's my quick overview of Unit 10. I'm about to move on to Unit 11, but if you have specific questions about Unit 10, now's a good time. Interesting question. In Central and Northern dialect, we can say "ukschaansish," which means "I'm friends with him or her." "Ukschaansish." In Barkly Sound dialects, that's "ukschaanmach." I'm friends with him or her. The question is, what happens if we replace "sish" with "nish"? "Ukschaannish" does not exactly mean we are friends. What it means is he or she is our friend. We're friends with him or her, which is very close, but not exactly the same thing. In Barkly Sound dialect, that's "ukschaanmin." Literally, we are friends with him or her. I'll add that there's a lot to understand about these expressions. These expressions are verbs in Nuchanoth: to be related to be friends with, to be with, and to be married to. Whereas in English, some of these expressions are expressed with nouns. So in English, friend is a noun. We don't say I friend him, we say we're friends. And you have to understand what the Nuchanoth sentence is actually saying in order to understand how to use it. Yeah, that's a good question. Can we say ukscha and stuth, like to be friends reciprocally? Stuth is a reciprocal ending, which means, which means basically each other, when people do the same thing to each other. I've asked elders that question, and generally they reject it. We often translate the ending stuth as each other, but it does not work exactly the same way as the English expression each other, so be cautious with it. Let's take a look at Unit 11 now. Unit 11 is on thanks. This is important for cultural reasons because thanks in Nuchanoth are significantly different from thanks in English. For one thing, English speakers say thank you many times a day. Nuchanoth speakers do not. In English, there are not very many ways to say thank you. In Nuchanoth, there are very many ways to say thank you. So as a result, English-speaking learners need to learn to stop saying thank you so much when they're speaking Nuchanoth. And you also need to learn to pay attention to what your thank you actually means. Nuchanoth thank yous, because there are several different ways to say thank you in Nuchanoth, they are more meaningful. They're actually saying something like, you've been useful, you've been kind, you've done me a favor, I'm acknowledging you. These are all different ways of thanking someone in Nuchanoth. Thanks is also a good opportunity to talk about some more complex sentence structures, because when we say thank you, sometimes we want to say thank you for something, and then we have to describe what we're thanking for, which requires sometimes complicated sentences. So we I gave you lots of examples of thanks, not all of which will be clear to you. That is, their structures won't necessarily be clear to you right now. The first thing I recommend doing with these thank yous is memorizing them, so that you can use them when the opportunity comes up. Eventually, once you have enough examples of a particular grammatical pattern, you will be ready to make a jump in understanding, where you suddenly get how this pattern works. You've been noticing examples of it. Once you have enough examples, then you're ready to make that jump. We went into detail about one particular structural feature of the language, which is the distinction between serial verb constructions and embedded clauses. The examples I used to explain these two structures were 3b, thank you for feeding me, which is a serial verb construction. I compared that to 4a, which is an embedded clause construction. We saw that sometimes you have to use an embedded clause. At other times, you have a choice between the two structures. You can use either a serial verb construction or an embedded clause. For an example of that, let's go back to 3b. As written in the script, it is thank you for feeding me. If we turn this into an embedded clause construction, then it becomes in thank you that you fed me. In I think those are the main points of units 10 and 11. So I'm going to move on to our preview of the next few units. Our next three units are Unit 12, Prayer; Unit 13, Eating Together; Unit 14, Talking to Elders. Unit 12, Prayer, is about an important cultural topic, and it will also represent a jump in complexity. We'll see some more complex sentences than we've worked on so far. Unit 13, Eating Together, another important cultural topic, because it's a very everyday thing and a very warm, friendly thing for Nuchanoth people to share food. Traditional Nuchanoth culture was a hunter-gatherer culture, which meant that every day, depending on the day, some people would have more food than others, so it was traditional to share. And there are lots of customs and language around sharing food. We'll be learning just the basics of that in Unit 13. Unit 14, Talking to Elders, is a unit version of the survival conversations topic that is also called Elders. That's survival conversations topic 4 out of 6 is called Elders, but really what it's about is useful phrases that you can use to stay in immersion when you're trying to speak only Nuchanoth. And the person you're talking to speaks much better than you do, you inevitably get panicky, you don't know what to say, and that category, the conversations in that category are there to help you stay in Nuchanoth in those situations. And Unit 14 is just a richer unit version of that. In connection to that topic, Unit 14, Talking to Elders, I want to share with you now another resource that some of you haven't seen yet. You've all seen the survival conversations, which have sentences for staying in immersion. That's the same topic that Unit 14 will be about. In addition, I have a resource called Immersion Sets, and one of the immersion sets is called Lifelines, which is basically the same thing. Just this morning, I put it up on quistoup.net on the curriculum page. So you'll find it there close to the bottom of the page with the title LC Sets Lifelines. I'll project that on my screen so you can see what it looks like. I'm showing you the curriculum page at quistoup.net, and towards the bottom of the page, you should see the resource LC Sets Lifelines. Here's what it looks like. It's a two-page document. There's a level one, which consists of just 4 sentences, and also a level two, which consists of 7 sentences. Level one is your very basic lifelines. I realized that I should have shared these with you sooner because many of you know, for example, the sentence hu'as iwa, which means say it again, hu'as iwa, and you'll see that that is lifeline number two. That is one of our most basic lifelines in Nuchanoth. So when you're trying to speak to someone only in Nuchanoth and you get lost, you don't understand what's being said, and you don't know what to say, hu'as iwa, say it again, is one of the things that you can say in that situation. So that's one of your lifelines. Before that, the first lifeline I recommend reaching for is a'akuk. A'akuk. Let me explain a little bit how to read this handout. This handout is for intermediate to advanced students. It's not for beginners because it requires some experience and understanding to use. Let me explain first the difference between the immersion sets and the survival conversations. So the survival conversations are for complete beginners. The survival conversations feed you a script that you just have to learn to pronounce and memorize and repeat. You don't have to think very hard to use the survival conversations. They are very useful sentences, but they require as little as can be expected from a beginning learner. The immersion sets are a step beyond that. They're also for beginners, but for beginners who are a little further along in their practice. The immersion set is not a script, it is rather a menu. When you're practicing the survival conversations, you are intended to repeat the script over and over and over again in order to embed that sentence in your mind so that it's there when you need it. With the immersion sets, you have rather a choice of several things you can say, and you get to pick one and try it out with a partner. But it is the immersion sets are still a much safer learning situation than full conversation. In full conversation, you have no idea what your conversation partner is going to say. But if you both agree to use the same immersion set, you have a much smaller menu that you know your partner is going to choose his responses from. And so it is a little bit beyond the survival conversations, but still a fairly safe way to practice. The level one lifelines are arranged in a particular order, roughly the order that you want to reach for them in. So when you find yourself in an immersion situation and you get confused, the first thing I recommend saying is, a-a-kook. What are you saying? A-a-kook. A-a-kook means I didn't quite catch that. Please explain, repeat, or explain what you're trying to say. What do these codes mean? A-a-kook, CTQ. The codes represent dialects. CTQ means Central, Northern, and Cayucat Chequelisset. So that means that this sentence sounds basically the same in all three dialects. A-a-kook is how it would be said in Central, Northern, and Cayucat Chequelisset. Barkly Sound dialects, on the other hand, would say a-a-ko-hak. A-a-ko-hak. What are you saying? A-a-ko-hak. That's what the B means, Barkly Sound. This resource was created for a mixed language classroom that also included DT-DOT. DT-DOT is a closely related sister language to Nunchaknof. The two languages are not mutually intelligible. That is, if you haven't heard the other language before, you won't understand it. But they're so similar that their structures are usually parallel, and some words and sentences are even identical. So that's what the D means. The D means that the DT-DOT version of this sentence is Bakwik. Bakwik. Lifeline number two is Huas Iwa in Barkly, Central, and Northern dialects. Huas Iwa. I won't go through every dialect version of every sentence unless people ask about particular ones. Lifeline three is I don't understand you. So if you've gotten to level three, if you've gotten to lifeline three, that means you've already asked them to your partner to explain themselves. You've asked them to repeat themselves. You still don't get it. It's time to admit, I don't understand what you're saying. In Northern dialect, this sounds like Wiwikups Sutil. Wiwikups Sutil. Last, you inevitably get into situations where you need a break. You can't do this. And the phrase that we use for that most of the time is Wikupis. Wikupis literally means let me not, and it's one of the ways to say I pass. So leave me out of this activity for now because my brain is full, is what we mean by that. I recommend memorizing and practicing many times your level one lifelines. You will find these all four of these phrases extremely useful when you're trying to stay in Nunchaknof. Only when you've mastered these, I recommend going on to level two and starting to incorporate these into your repertoire as well. The level two lifelines are, what do you want to say? I want to say blah, blah, blah. How does one say blah, blah, blah? One says it like this. I don't know how it's said. Am I saying it right? You're saying it right. These are also very useful in a situation where people are trying to speak only Nunchaknof, but there's a difference in level. And usually one person gets lost and needs to catch up, and these phrases can help you do that. That is a brief introduction to the Lifelines immersion set. Now I'm going to talk about some issues in pronunciation that I'm noticing. These are some of the most serious issues that I see some of you struggling with, so I think they're worth talking about now. There are two issues. One is the pronunciation of the word thitwahak, which means cloudy. Thitwahak. In a Hadasa dialect, we don't say thitwahak, we say thitwahyu. Thitwahyu. Same root, different ending. In Barkley and Central dialects, we say Thitwahak. The other pronunciation issue that I will talk about is sentences with a double or triple QK combination at the end, which does not happen very much in Barkley Sound dialects, but is very common in Central and Northern dialects. And an example is, who are your parents? Which in Hadasit dialect is Achakuk, Achakuk Umiaksu, Not Weakso. Achakuk Umiaksu, Not Weakso. Let's start with the word Thitwahak. Thitwahak. English speaking learners have a lot of trouble pronouncing this word and remembering it. And I think it's because it has two consonants in it that English speakers have trouble believing are really consonants. There's the hard W and the back H. English speakers want to believe the back H isn't there, and that there's a T before the W, which there is not. The syllables in Thitwahak are Thi, Wa, Huck. Thi, Wa, Huck. And if your first language is English, you might find that you need to have a conversation with your brain and convince it that the first, second syllable really is Wa, Wa, and the third syllable really is Huck. Huck. Now, when we add a vowel initial ending, that is an ending that starts in a vowel, to this word, like ut, that will cause a change in syllabification. So when we add the ending ut to thitwahuk, we get thitwahakut. The syllables are thi, wa, ha, gut. Thi, wa, ha, gut. Notice that the K has switched syllables. In thitwahuk, the K is at the end of the third syllable. In thitwahakut, the K is at the beginning of the fourth syllable. If you have any trouble at all with this word, I recommend practicing saying, building various word, longer words with it. So, for example, in Barkley Sound dialect, thitwahak, cloudy. Thitwahakut, cloudy now. Thitwahakutma, it is cloudy now. Anima thitwahak, it sure is cloudy. Anima thitwahak. The second pronunciation issue that I'll talk about today has to do with double and triple back of the tongue sounds. So it's very common for to get a double K at the end of a word in Central and Northern dialects because many continuous aspect forms end in K. Thitwahak is an example of a continuous aspect form that ends in a K. And also the possessive ending uk or uk ends in a K. Furthermore, the question mood ending for you, which in Barkley Sound dialects is hak, is just k, just a plain old K, k in Central and Northern dialects. As a result, when we get a stem that ends in K or the possessive ending uk followed by the question ending for you, we get these pile-ups of Ks. Let's work for now just on the example, who are your parents? In Hadasit dialect, this is Achakuk umiksu notwirksu. Achakuk umiksu notwirksu. Let's look just at the first word. Achakuk. Achakuk. There are three syllables in this word. The syllables are a, cha, kuk. That third syllable is the tough one. Kuk. Kuk. If your first language is English, you will really want to stick a vowel between those two K's. You'll want to say kukuk or kukka because that makes it easier to say. However, there is no vowel in the Nuchanoth pronunciation of that word. Both K's have a release, what linguists call a release. K is a plosive sound, which means there's a brief moment of silence, followed by a release, which sounds like this. When you put a vowel after a K, it sounds like this. K. K. If I take that vowel away, I just have the release. The third syllable of Achakuk consists of two K's, each of which has a release, but neither of which is followed by a vowel. So it sounds like this. K-k-k-k. k. It's not cuck, and it's not cucka. It's cook, cook. A way to work yourself up to it is to start by saying just one K. Say cook. Q-U-K. Cook. Then say Now put them together. Cook. Cook. When you say it at fluent speed, it sounds like this. A cha cook. A cha cook. We're doing exactly what they do on Sesame Street when they press the letters of the word together, except now you're having to pronounce something that is considered unpronounceable in English, but is perfectly pronounceable in Ichanov. The last topic that I'm going to address in today's lecture is about how we structure our practices. And I want to draw an analogy here between practicing a new language and working out in the gym. In both cases, the more time you spend on it, the better you'll get. But if your practice is of poor quality, you are wasting your time. If you've worked out in a gym, you might be familiar with the concepts of reps and sets. So if I want to build up my biceps, I might do dumbbell curls, which means holding a dumbbell and pulling it towards my chest a bunch of times. Each time I do that exercise, when I pull it towards my chest, that's a rep, which is short for repetition. If I do 10 of those, then I would say that I've done one set of 10 reps. And when you're building your muscles, you want to carefully regulate how many reps are in each set and how many sets you do overall. And the same is true, I think, when we practice language. When you do reps, for example, when we're practicing our survival conversations and you're doing the same mini conversation several times in a row, that's an example of doing many reps in a roll, in a row. And the effect of that is, if you're doing it right, the effect of that is to improve your pronunciation. But it doesn't really help you become a better speaker overall. It just improves your pronunciation. And when we're learning a new language, pronunciation is the first hurdle, right? We can't do anything else until we can at least make ourselves understood. If our pronunciation is too weak, we can't even make ourselves understood in the language. So we have to work on our pronunciation first, and the way to do that is with reps. Once your pronunciation is at a workable level, a level where you can actually make yourself understood to another person, you can work on sets. And a set is a bunch of reps that you use in a particular way. I think that sets of phrases or of mini conversations are an opportunity for you to start to improve your understanding. So, for example, take the very first survival conversation, which is get out of bed. Okay, I'll get up. In Hadasid, it sounds like tek petli, chu tek pitlaks. When I'm first practicing this as a beginning learner, I'm just trying to pronounce it right. So I'm doing reps in order to improve my pronunciation. Once my pronunciation is acceptable, I can start to use this within the context of a more complicated practice. So we might do all five of the first chunk of mini conversations as a set. And when I do it, I can make a body sign or visualize in my mind what I'm actually saying. And I'm starting to improve my understanding. So let me be a little more precise about that. If I'm working with a beginning Hadasid learner like Lindsay P, the first thing we'll work on is her pronunciation. And now Lindsay's at the point where her pronunciation is understandable. Someone who's never met her before but knows the language would be able to understand what she's saying because her pronunciation is to that level. Now, when Lindsay and I practice conversation one, we can when I if I'm being the if I'm taking on the role of the parent, which is partner A, I'll say tek pietli, get out of bed, and I'll visualize in my mind. I'll pretend that I'm actually Lindsay's parent and I'm telling her to get out of bed. She should visualize that she's actually the child and is being ordered to stand up. Visualizing that, or using some kind of sign, physical sign, to show that you understand the meaning of what you're saying, starts to build understanding. The third step is actual communicative fluency. This is where you've practiced this mini conversation enough times that you can pronounce it well. You understand what it means. When you say it, you visualize what it means. And an actual situation comes up in real life where you want to tell someone this. Like, I arranged a meeting with Josh and I come to his house, but he hasn't gotten out of bed yet. And then I'll say, Josh, get up. What I've just done is I've used the sentence that I know in an actual communicative situation. And then if Josh understands me and obeys my command, that is a successful communication between the two of us. And that is the final step in developing fluency. So I find this whole analogy that I've just laid out for you between language learning and working out in a gym, I find it a useful way to plan my practices. I only have a certain number of minutes a day that I can use to practice the languages I want to learn. I want to make the best use of that time that I can. And so I ask myself, am I at the beginning level? Do I just need to work on my pronunciation? In that case, I need to do reps, and I'll carefully select which exercise I do reps of. Am I at the second step? Is my pronunciation decent? And now I need to make sure I understand what it actually means. Then I need to do sets, and I design those sets. When I give you guys recommended exercises for our one-on-one practices, I'm suggesting sets to you, but I think that your actual needs will sometimes differ from the sets that I recommend, which is why I encourage you to talk out with your conversation partners. What do we actually need to work on? At what stage in our learning are we? What sets should we design for ourselves during this short practice? And then the last step is actual communication. If you go far enough in your learning of Nichanalf, you'll reach one golden moment where you are in real life and you can actually use a Nichanalf sentence that you've learned or that you know how to make in order to communicate what's in your head to and put it in someone else's head. The conclusion to that analogy is that I see myself as your personal trainer. I suggest exercises to you. I remind you how much time you have left. Basically, I'm worrying about some things so that you can concentrate on what you need to concentrate on, which is whatever exercise you're doing. Ach, ach, sich una, tschüss. That's all I have for today.